Welcome to chapter 5, lecture 5 about counting. We'll continue with this in chapter 7, where you find more advanced counting techniques. Here it's some background material. I guess you have heard most of it before, so this refresh your memory maybe. Combinatorics is can be tough, and we have to have some guiding principles, rules to handle these problems. And one of these, two of these rules are product rule and sum rule. And the product rule goes like this: if you say you have two tasks that are separated, can be performed independently of each other, and the first one can be doing N1 ways and the other in N2, then there are N1 times N2 ways to do the procedure. An example: flip a coin twice, in the middle of page one there. Second flip doesn't care about first flip, so there are two possibilities, head and tail for each of them, so there are two times two equal to four outcomes from such this task is performed, and we can list them. I think a good thing to, if you get a more bigger problem, take something smaller and try to list them and see the patterns, and then you can attack the bigger problem. That's a good way. I think, and we can repeat these arguments. So doing it, flip the coin 10 times, then we get 2 to the power of 10 outcomes. Sum rule, then it's this, if the tasks can be done either in N1 ways or in N2 ways, then there are N1 plus N2 ways to do the task. There's no overlap there, but there are these two sets are disjoint. And here I take a coin example again, the bottom of page one. Say you flip a coin 10 times. In how many ways can you get at least two heads? At least two heads. Well, then you can make a Venn diagram and separate this into two parts. The outcomes you can take, there are some where you get 0 and 1 heads, and the other one is at least two heads. These are disjoint sets. Then we know that there are N1 for 0 and 1 heads and N2 for the other. We know that this N1 plus N2 add up to 1024, 2 to the power of 10. That was the sum rule. And N2 is a little bit hard to calculate, but then you can use this sum rule and instead take 2 to the power of 10 minus N1. Minus N1, because N1 is easier to calculate. It must be 11. There is one string with only zeros, and there are 10 strings with only one. So that was the sum rule. I turn the page to page two. Sometimes these sets are not disjoint. And then we have to use something that is called inclusion-exclusion principle that we will look more upon in chapter 7. You see my figure there. I have two sets and they have an overlap. And I want to say how many elements are there in this shaded region there. How many elements are in A1 union A2? Well, it's A1, the number one in A1, and in plus the ones in A2, but then there is this double counting in the intersection, so we have to take away that once. So here I give you an example of this from the book. We speak about bit strings of a length 10. Now it's not head and tails, it's zeros and ones, but same. There are still 2 to the power of 10. 1024 all different kind of bit strings. And then we ask how many bit strings of length 10 begin either with 3 zeros or end with 0, 0. Can you solve that one? I think you should now stop listening and take a break and try to solve this. What is A1? What is A2? Is there an intersection? Use this Venn diagram above. Later on in this text you will find a solution, but don't look this. Try to solve it. Okay, I go on with the pigeonhole principle. An innocent one that is often useful. If we have k plus 1 objects are placed in k boxes, then at least one box contains 2 or more objects. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? Then at least one box. Think of a bus. There are two places on each seat, so to speak. People come in and they want some space, so they take a free seat. Say there are 50 such seats and person 51, he comes in. He will not find a free seat. He has to join another person and share a seat. And these things can be generalized. I give just the one example there. If you take among 53 persons, you can find at least one weekday for which at least 8 persons were born at that day. There comes the ceiling function, by the way. Smallest integer greater or equal to this rational number, that's 8. There are 7 weekdays, so you can think of there are 49 people, are the 7 on Sundays, 7 on Mondays, and so on. But then comes this 4 other people, the last ones. They should be distributed on, they are born at some weekday. And so there comes this 8. Yeah. Here comes something interesting about so-called Ramsey theory. That's rather advanced stuff, but I mention it a little bit about it. because it has a connection here we will see with graph theory in chapter 9. And the Ramsey number for 3, 3 is equal to 6. What's that? Well, think of a, you can say that each pair of persons are either strangers or know each other. Of course, that's not really true, but we think of it in this way, it's clear. They are either strangers or know each other. And then you come to a party with 6 people. Then it turns out there is always possible to find a subgroup of 3 people that all know each other or are strangers to each other. It's always possible. And then we say that after Ramsey, the man who invented all this, that R 3, 3 is equal to 6. You can be 100% sure. There is always so that there, you can find such a subgroup in among 6 people. That will not happen all the time in five or smaller groups. And it's even possible to prove this, if you think of these persons, call them A, B, C, D, E, and F, and we have a particular look at person A. Well, he can be a stranger to all of them, stranger to all of them. Maybe he knows one, or he knows 2. And then we can go the other way around, but we can stop there. And I have I illustrated the relations here between here, and I take the case 3 that he is stranger to 3 people, namely C, D, and E. And I denote this with a dashed line. Saw the line, then he knows B and F. Consider now C, D, and E. Have a look upon the 3 persons that don't know A. 2 cases can happen. C, D, E are all friends, or 2 of them say C and E are strangers to each other. Can you now find this triangle with sides of the same type? Can you in this case find a dashed triangle or a solid triangle? I think you can. So I and you can then I've done the case 3 plus 2, you can do 4 plus 1 and so yourself. Here I used dashed or solid. You could think of that I have made colorings, say red and blue, of these edges. What's really comp about this is really a graph, what I have done here in the figure. It's some vertices, persons, and edges between them. And I make colorings, red, blue, we can say, of the edges. And you can imagine that this increase, this complexity of this problem increases rapidly with larger, when I'm interested of larger subgroups. I have had a look before on the Wikipedia where I checked this. I've written some numbers here. R4.4 is equal to 18. If you are a party with 18 people, you are 100% sure there is a subgroup that all know each other, or if a subgroup of four people that all know each other or are completely strangers to each other. If you do ask the same for 5-5, no one knows. It's so big. It lies somewhere among 43 and 49. When I say big, this is the complexity is so big for this problem. And if we go to 6-6, the bounds are even worse. It lies somewhere between 102 and 165. And you could think of for a computer to investigate now such a problem. I mean, you do coloring red and blue of the edges. Well, there are two choices for each edge to be, should be red or blue. It's like tossing a coin. And how many pairs are there of n people? There are roughly n squared pairs. So the time complexity here must be big O 2 to the power of n squared. You can imagine how big this is difficult for computers to investigate. That's why we don't know R55 and R66. There was a joke on I read a mathematician that said that if there come space aliens to here and they ask us to calculate R55, otherwise they will kill us, then we should use the all computers we have and make a try. If they ask us for R66, then it's better to fight back and try to kill the aliens instead. Yeah, that was something about Ramsey theory, and we will come back to colorings of graphs in chapter 9, but we will I think only do color the vertices. But there can be, in this problem it was edge coloring. Okay, and here you find at the bottom of page 3 you find my solution to the problem on page 2. I hope you got it right. There are 352 such bit streaks. I turn page. And then comes stuff about permutations and combinations. And now I go quickly because this has been in previous courses. You can, all these combinatorial things can often be boils down to have n balls in a bowl and you pick R of them. And you can do it with repetitions or not, and you care about the order or you don't care about the order. Say you have 5 letters A, B, C, D, E, and you are picking 2 of them, and you care about the order, you can say how many so-called words can you be formed. Well, you can select the first one with five ways, and you can then you have four possibilities for the next letter. So there are 20 ways, and these can be expressed by factorials. 5 factorial divided by 3 factorial. And there is this formula at the top of page 344, permutations. And you can list them. And so this we could think of then, 5 balls in our bowl, and you pick 2 of them. You care about the order, but you don't allow for repetitions. Often we are not so interested. We are not interested in the order. Then we come to combinations. Then we divide away. It's the number of permutations divided by the permutation of these R objects. So, and I often use this notation to the right also. Then it's called binomial coefficients. This is also in the book. N over R, we say. And I take an example there. How many bit strings of length 10 have exactly 3 O's? So then it's the question of where to put these zeros. First position can be chosen in 10 ways, second in 9, and third in 8 ways. So then I have 720 possibilities, but then we realize that now I have made some mistake here, because first I can select 3, then 7, and then put this 0 in position 9, but I could do it in 397 739, but that's the same bit string, so I have to divide away these permutations of these 3 objects. They because they correspond to the same bit string. Yes, so correct answer is then that I have to divide by 6, and we can express this with factorials, and so this is 10 factorial divided by 7 factorial divided by 3 factorial. That's 120. And we could ask how the same question is, how many bit strings of length have exactly 7 ones, not 3 zeros, but 7 ones. But that's the same problem, and these binomial coefficients fulfill this relation I have there on bottom of page 4. C n comma r is equal to C n comma n minus r. Which ones do you select, or which ones do you will not select? That will give the same answer. Okay, page 5 then, and here I just mentioned the binomial theorem. Multiply 2 or 3 factors x plus y. How many will there be of a certain type, say x? That is a pure combinatorial thing. And what comes in there are the binomial coefficients. And you have heard about this before, so I don't say so much about it. The binomial theorem. And we have this, you have heard about Pascal's triangle, and this identity that is you in middle of the page five. In that way, you can construct Pascal's triangle using this relation there. I have in the bottom of the page, I have another viewpoint of this. Think of it that you are a taxi driver in some town where with blocks like this, and you can, there are one-way streets, so you can go right or you can go up, and you sit in 00 at the origin, and you want to, you have to drive to 22, two blocks right, two blocks up. In how many, then how many possibilities do you have? Well, I've listed this number there, it's, I've written a 6. To go from 00 to 22, this can be done in 6 way, and it's a question about when to do the right moves. We can do them first to right and then up, or we can do right up, etc. And you can really convince yourself that there will be 6 such routes. And you can think of then that these are 4 positions, and it's a question of where to put these 2 R's. It's like with the bit strings, we should put out some zeros here, we should put out 2 R's. And how will we come to 2-2? Well, we can do it in 2 ways. We can come from below, from 2-1, and to come, and now I use the summation principle, and we come from below or we come from the left, and they cannot be performed simultaneously, these things, so I can add them. And there are 3 ways from below, and there are 3 ways from the left. So 6 is equal to 3 plus 3. And the same with binomial coefficients. 4 over 2 is equal to 3 over 1 plus 3 over 2. And then I think you can take any point here, and from this you understand Pascal's identity. If this was in a town where, I think maybe New York or so, where it's maybe one-way streets, the taxi driver there, they understand Pascal's identity by heart, I think. So that's a nice way of thinking of this. Okay, last page, 5-5. I think there is a section 5-6 also, but that we skip. And here this table is from the book. I have collected all these results here. Pick R balls from a bowl with N balls. And do we care about the order? Is it with respect to order? Yes, no. Repetitions? Yes, no. We get 4 possibilities there. And I think now you are familiar with 3 of them. But the upper right one there, repetitions, yes, with respect to order, no. I think we must have a look at that one. So I do it with an example. 5 balls I take, and we pick up 3 of them. We allow for repetitions, but don't care about the order. So if you denote x1, the number of ones that come up, x2, the number of twos that come up, and so on, our problem is equivalent to the following. How many integer solutions are there to this following problem? X1 plus x2 plus x3 plus x4 plus x5 equal to 3. All these x's, they are integers greater or equal to 0. In how many ways? How many integer solutions? We are only interested in how many ones that came up, not in which order or so, how many twos came up. So we are concerned with this problem. And here it's a small little problem, so we can almost list them here, all of them. I start systematically with one possibility, 3 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0. That means we come up with ball number 1 comes up all 3 times. And here comes a little smart trick here to understand this. I put this in one-to-one correspondence with the following symbols. 3 sticks and 4 plus signs. You can think of, as you often do, instead of 3, we'd make 3 marks. So I call them sticks. So there will be 3 sticks and 4 plus signs in this. For each possible combination, there will be a string of sticks and plus signs. 2 plus 1 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0. That's also an outcome here. But so then it will be 2 sticks followed by a plus sign, 1 stick, and then 3 plus signs. So I'm interested to count how many combinations I have to the left. But since this is a bijection, it's a one-to-one correspondence between these strings of symbols, plus signs and sticks, I can attack the problem by looking at this instead. Let's see, there are 3 sticks always. There are 4 plus signs. There are 4 plus signs, and 3 plus 4 is 7. So there are 7 positions, and we should place out these 3 sticks. And we have seen it before today, but we have then spoke about zeros and ones, or head and tail or tails. Here it's plus signs and sticks. And this can be done then in 7/3 ways. So that's our answer to the problem. So that means 5 plus 3 minus 1/3. And the general formula you have up there to the upper right there in the table. So, next chapter we will do this is chapter 7, and then it's more advanced counting techniques. Bye.